Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour for July 2nd, 2020. And July 4th coming up this in a couple days here. So I hope all of you have, you know, all the hot dogs and bratwurst and have a good celebration, etc. And also be aware that there's a very dark shadow hanging over this country right now. So this is a celebrating and having a good time is paramount to showing people that we are still a nation of liberty, a nation that was founded based on the concepts of liberty, and that this is a very important celebration. And the other thing is that on my own particular survey is that 99% of the people are not involved in racist issues. There are large groups of black people and people from all different denominations, races, whatever. And I really don't like the term race. I think we're all part of the human race. And I myself in the circles, and I'm involved with lots and lots and lots of people, probably way more than most of you would ever do in 10 lifetimes. And I see people at a very high intellectual level. And this is being brought down to a very base level by some people or by the news media. And what I see international groups of people striving to make a better world, working hard with what they've got. That's what I see. And so the news media is completely stretching all of this, distorting it completely out of any reality. Okay, so a lot of science topics to cover tonight. There is a comet C2020F3. F is in Frank. It's called NEOWISE. It's automated search, and it is crossing by the sun right now. It expanded its brightness by a factor of 8 in just a few days. It was visible in the SOHO solar satellite view from June 22nd to the 27th. And there's some interesting quirks about this particular comet. It definitely had some sunward spike activity. That's something that I'll try and come back to that topic at the end. But what I find interesting is that this was a morning comet, and as it passed around the sun, I don't know the exact date, but it's passing around the sun, and it all of a sudden becomes an evening comet. Now, the reason why this is interesting is because even though Christmas is a half a year away, we're the complete opposite cycle of the calendar from Christmas, this is exactly what happened in the Christmas story, and that's exactly why you understand, one of the many, many reasons why you understand that the Christmas star was a comet. And that has some very interesting implications, and I talk about this more at Christmas time. But the fact that it happened with the three wise men, it happened in the opposite way. In other words, when they first discovered the Christmas star, it was in the east. Remember, the wise men saw the star in the east. But interestingly enough, by the time they packed their bags and got ready to go, which was a trip, this was a many, many month trip, these wise men were watching the heavens, and this was their sign that the Messiah was coming, had come, or was arriving. And so they packed their bags, and this was well known throughout history that this particular star would indicate the coming of the Messiah. And so they discovered the comet in the east, but they followed it to the west, and to the west for a long period of time. So this was a comet that was around for months and months and months. And when it came to rest over the stable in Bethlehem, then they went in and they realized that the Christ child was the Messiah. So this is just one of dozens of reasons to understand that the Christmas star was a comet. And boy, do they not want you to know that. And this is so strange because you would think that, for example, the Catholic Church, which is the, well, and then there's the Eastern Orthodox Church also, and there's a big division there. If you know people that are Eastern Orthodox, they are very strict, and they really don't like the Catholic Church or what's happened to it, and for many good reasons. But the Catholic Church, oddly enough, completely dispels this idea of the Christmas star being a comet. It should be widely taught, and it should be very important. But it doesn't fit in with their narrative to keep the public from understanding the issues of, for example, Planet X. If you look at my new book, for example, Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X, I have a picture of a comet on the cover. And I have a picture of an artist's rendition of the planets throwing lightning bolts across the heavens. And so very important to understand that Planet X looks like a comet, not a planet, not this big round ball in the sky. And that leads to, and well, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I would just suggest that you read my new book, Planet X Update 2020, The Real History of Planet X. Very important book. It's short. It's an easy read. It's very inexpensive, $9.95, but it brings about the history that is, finally, I was able to put this together. So back to the comet, it's comet C2020F3, NEOWISE. And it'll be interesting to see how this comet performs. It did not get close enough to the sun to really get some big reactions. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that what's funny is the space news talks about this just nonchalantly, like, yeah, it went from a morning comet to an evening comet, not realizing that what they're doing is supporting exactly what I'm talking about the Christmas star. And, you know, this is part of their stupidity, part of their ignorance in dealing with scientific issues, you know, because they, in their stupidity, they can't hide the truth, is what I'm saying. A quick story here. In space.com, they're touting the use of water on the moon, which is pretty tentative at this point anyway, might be trapped in some regions around the south pole of the moon, in some craters, just very small traces of water. But to use this extremely, extremely limited resource for various uses, one of them being propulsion. So if you can take water and you can use, say, solar panels, wind will not work very well on the moon because there's no atmosphere. But there's plenty of sun with no clouds. And so if for long-term missions, you can use solar panels. But the idea is that you could split water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then when you put them back together, use it for propulsion. Okay, well, that's sure a trekky idea, except the resources of outer space. This is one of the big issues of the day, is that resources in outer space are kind of thin. You might hit an asteroid someplace with the mother load of, say, platinum, which would change the entire world economy overnight and make somebody the richest man on the planet. But in general, things are pretty sparse out there. Things are pretty thin, as you might say. But using water resources on the moon for frivolous things like let's just go from here to there probably is not a good idea. And so the question is, how do you protect limited resources from people that would scavenger them for just pretty frivolous uses? And it's not something that's being covered today. They're about to send another rover to Mars, and one of the issues with the rover is contamination. They've contaminated planets and moons already in the solar system, and possibly irreversibly. When they go to Europa, I think I talked about that last week, about the moon Europa, they want to go and discover if there's living creatures in the oceans that they believe exist under the upper ice crust. Will they actually contaminate the moon and kill everything that's living there? That's what happened, for example, when the Europeans came to the North American continent and to the Americas in general. They brought a lot of disease. They brought measles, they brought chickenpox, and a lot of other diseases that the native population had no resistance at all, and it killed them off very quickly. So would they do that with a contaminating a moon like Europa through stupidity? Yeah, NASA does not have the technology to completely rid its spacecraft of viruses and bacteria that come from planet Earth. And they've been they have departments that supposedly are doing this, but they don't. Okay, just another quick mention that this topic keeps popping up every now and then. And this was here when I was back in the 1980s. I was in California looking for funding for my propulsion systems. And when I'd attend military meetings, there was talk about nuclear rockets. Well, nuclear rockets will never get us to the stars. They have a little more oomph than it's called the specific impulse, and it's a dimension that can rate a rocket engine or a propulsion system in general, specific impulse. And nuclear rockets are a little bit better than chemical rockets, but you still have a tremendous amount of fuel. If you're talking about going to the next star, then you have a tremendous amount of matter. Either you have to collect it on the way, or you have to carry it with you. And if you carry it with you, you have the mass from the beginning. If not, you have to pick this material up along the way, which slows you down. It's like a jet engine going through the air. There's a tremendous amount of resistance on that engine, but burning the petroleum fuel in the engine spits the air out the back with enough force to overcome the drag of the engine and the airplane to make the airplane move. And, of course, the lift advantage of wings, which rockets don't have because they're out in outer space where there is no atmosphere. So nuclear rockets will not get us very far. And they're cumbersome. They're just, you know, they're not going to get us very far. They might be somewhat useful in the solar system, just like ion engines are useful, but they're not going to get us to the next star. They're not going to get us faster out to, say, outer planets in the solar system. There is a new movie out. I just saw the trailer for this. It's had unbelievable 2 million views in 2 days. And that's, of course, because YouTube can push these things. Whereas they can block my material from getting out and well-known, they can take something like this garbage and promote it. So this is called Greenland. It's a movie, and Gerard Butler, is the star, and he's one of my favorite stars. I mean, I like him as an actor. He's done a lot of action movies and things like that. But anyway, he's the main actor, which is fine, you know, big Hollywood actor. But it's like, let's scare the crap out of little kids. This is a PG-13 movie, a family movie I think it's coming out this summer. But, you know, it's one of these, it's not like a monster movie where it's fiction and everybody knows it's fiction. This is like, hits a little closer to home, like you're standing in line waiting to get into the underground bunker, which the government built only for themselves, and so all these people are sitting, and all of a sudden, it just starts raining down chunks of asteroid. You know, and Central Florida is destroyed, and I mean, this is to scare the crap out of kids, but I've said this before, I said it on the John Moore Show yesterday morning, that NASA will be involved. This is my prediction, and, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but that they would be involved in some kind of major false flag event coming up. This would be the final event that would shatter the 2020 presidential election, which includes elections all the way down to the local layers of government, state, local, you know, county, municipality, etc. And so they are desperate to control this upcoming election and fix it, and then come out the other side and, oh, gee, look at who won. You know, Joe Biden, who can't get two people to come and see him. Joe Biden, this guy can't remember his own name. I mean, what a pathetic loser. But he's the perfect Democrat candidate because he's totally controllable. Now, you tell Joe to repeat something, Joe will repeat it. He's seen his better days, let's put it that way. But back to the Greenland movie. Like I say, scare the crap out of kids. So if I were parents, I'd be a little remiss to see this PG-13 movie with my kids, because I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, they scared the crap out of us. They said the Russians are going to attack any day. We had drills in school where we had to get under our desks because, a nuclear bomb would hit Minneapolis a short distance away. And the shock wave and the radiation and everything, you know, that was the height of the Cold War. And the whole point of the Cold War was military-industrial complex to drive all of this tax money into nuclear weapons and the nuclear arms race, and to keep everybody on edge. And that was the news. That was the coronavirus of that era. Now it's coronavirus and people marching in the streets trying to kill people. It's just insanity. So, there's nothing new under the sun. It's just a different version. It's just another chapter in the book. Okay, so at any rate, this movie, the reason I'm mentioning this is now if you look in the science news part of the spectrum, NASA has stories that it's trying to move asteroids. So what if NASA, what if they mess up? Let's just put it mildly. Would you trust NASA? Would you trust NASA to move an asteroid away from hitting Earth and get it right? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't trust those morons to move a rock out of my driveway, let alone an asteroid that potentially could hit Earth. I mean, what if they mess up? What if the thing they have to move the asteroid moves it in the wrong direction? Instead of moving it away from Earth, it moves it closer to Earth. These people are idiots. You know, there's a lot of good people working at NASA, but when you come to these programs like this, top down, they're a bunch of morons. So I would not trust NASA moving an asteroid to save Earth. I think I'd rather just take my chances with nature. And let's take an example. If NASA said there's an imminent crash of an asteroid with Earth, first of all, they would have to have exacting data, number one. Number two, they would have to know that there's nothing that's going to hit that asteroid in the meantime, like some particle or some other space rock or something that would not deflect it from its path. So they would have to know all of this, and they don't. The end result is they simply don't know all of this. And then they're out there trying to ram into it with something. Well, these things are moving very fast in space, and you can't just come along and hit it. What if they hit it like off center or off kilter, and the end result is that it moves it in the wrong direction? These people are morons, complete morons. You know, this is playing with matches with an open can of gasoline. The reason I'm mentioning this is because isn't it odd that you have this blockbuster Hollywood movie coming out talking about asteroids hitting Earth at the same time NASA is moving asteroids that are supposed to hit Earth. Anyway, a little too suspect for me. But as I said, expect, the end result of all of this would be to pull the power grid. To pull the power grid. And that would be enough to disrupt the entire country. You know, have roaming, marauding groups of nutcases coming up and down the street, burning things, etc., causing chaos. No, that's where this country is headed. That's the plan. Somebody, you know, if you think this is going to stop and go away, the coronavirus, no, they're going to have second waves. It's already starting, the announcements. Totally false. Totally fake news. So anyway, Oaxaca, Mexico, this past week experienced a 7.4 earthquake. And I've been in Oaxaca. I've spent quite a bit of time in Oaxaca, Mexico, in fact, when I was younger. And there's not much there. I mean, it's people are still living in relatively modest housing that actually fares pretty well during earthquakes. So the main buildings that were received damage were hospitals. There were three main hospitals in the area, and they tend to be better built, more standard construction, you know, cement and block and that type of construction. So they don't fare well in an earthquake. So those were the three main areas that were buildings that were damaged. But Oaxaca is in southern Mexico, a beautiful mountainous region, and a lot of ruins there. Oaxaca is a place where a lot of the ancient civilizations lived, and it's west of the Yucatan area where the majority of the Mayans lived. So Oaxaca is a very interesting area historically, and of course earthquake prone. It's that mid-continental ridge, the Sierra Madre, as they call it, the ridge that runs down the entire central Cordillera of Mexico. Oaxaca receiving a 7.4 earthquake, so that's a pretty sizable earthquake. And I didn't hear of any deaths. I'm sure there were people shaken. You're in an earthquake that size. I was in an earthquake of that size in Ecuador a couple years ago, and I'll tell you, that rattles your cage. You know, when the earth starts rattling underneath you to that level, that's the most basic thing, the earth under your feet. It's like the air you breathe. The earth under your feet is, when it starts shaking uncontrollably and you start flopping around on the ground uncontrollably. I think I told this story on the air, but I was in Ecuador and I was in a shower and it was all tile, which is common in Latin America. So the entire shower was made out of tile. And of course, I'm, you know, in the shower, taking a shower full of soap. And all of a sudden, this 7 point whatever earthquake hits. So I'm being slammed between the walls of this shower, bang, back and forth. And I have to get out. And the lights, of course, went out. So it was dark. It was middle of the night. And all I hear is screaming. Of course, some people, it was in a town. And you just hear just unbelievable screaming. Everybody's screaming bloody murder and trying to run out into the streets. And so I was able to, as I stepped out of the shower, of course, the tiled floor is very slippery. And it pitch dark, couldn't see a thing. Run out and had to bump into furniture and everything, trying to make my way to where I remembered the front door was. And I run out, finally get outside with my towel in my hand. I don't think anybody noticed because they were all scared, screaming, trying to get their kids out of the house, you know, into the streets. And then the aftershocks start, you know, and the buildings are cracking. Oh, my, yeah, if you're in an earthquake, let me tell you, it's an experience. It's an experience. And then I looked, I was near the coastline, and I looked from the hill where I was on and looked down at the coastline, and there was lightning, atmospheric type lightning down along the coastline, which is common when there are earthquakes also, there's lightning. and electrical activity. So anyway, just a little bit of commentary on the Oaxaca earthquake. This is an interesting story, came in from a listener, and I appreciate when people send these things in, because I wouldn't have known about this otherwise. But the United States recently purchased a whole new fleet of ice breakers. This is very interesting. And the reason was for a strong Arctic security presence. And so this includes the Antarctic, in other words, the South Pole. You know, let me just be clear, the North Pole, there's no matter, there's no land under the North Pole. It's simply a floating iceberg with the snow piled up on top, etc. And so the North Pole is very different than the South Pole. The South Pole, there's a big continent there. It's called Antarctica, which is a continent. It's a landmass, which is warm, which is very interesting. It's only a few thousand years old, being in that position, around 1500 BC, as far as we can tell, certainly within the last 10,000 years. Antarctica was a temperate climate. And so now it's covered with ice, and that ice is sliding off. So very interesting situation. But why would the United States consider it imperative to have a new fleet of icebreakers? Well, the story is that probably within the last 10 years, there were some major archaeological discoveries in Antarctica at the South Pole. And there are major regions down there that are not covered with snow. They don't have any ice, any snow, anything. So, at any rate, if you look at some of the bird expeditions, there's some original footage online you can go see. This is very, very interesting. So, just a very interesting news item. Also, I should mention quickly, you know, yesterday I was on the John Moore Show, which I am every Wednesday, except last week I missed, but typically I'm a regular guest Wednesday morning with John Moore first hour. So I was on that show, and also I was the guest host. So I hosted the Power Hour show yesterday, the entire show, and I talked about food. So I'm not going to rediscuss that. You can go listen there. I might cover a little bit of food issues on this show tonight, later on, if I have some time left over. But so go listen to that. The Power Hour yesterday, usually Daniel Brigman is the host, but he requested that I sit in for him on yesterday. So go listen to that show. And I talk about all aspects of foods. I talk about seeds. I talk about modern types of agriculture. I talk about pests and fungicide and fungus and things like that. I talk about water and climate and containers, materials for containers, energy and logistics of small farmers. I talk about all of these topics, organic, organic and non-GMO, etc. So anyway, I talk about all these topics. It's very important to understand that we are heading into times when you have to get your food locally. This has to be something. So the big corporations like Monsanto and the big corporate farms, etc., will continue. But even in urban settings, there's a guy on the internet, I think he's called Urban Farmer, and I believe that's the website, and there's other ones. There's Ice Age Farmer, a guy who talks about an impending Maunder Minimum type of event. And let me see, I can quick pull those names up. Christian Westbrook is the Ice Age Farmer, and then Urban Farmer Curtis Stone, a couple people who are dedicated to those topics on the internet. They have web pages, etc. And by the way, I may be starting a channel here soon. I don't know if it'll be on YouTube. already have a YouTube channel. I just don't use it much. But I may be expanding my reach in terms of Amazon, a video channel. I already have a Patreon channel, and expanding my social media presence a bit just to get the word out, because the quality of my presentations in a lot of cases in the analysis far exceeds anything you're going to find on the internet. But the really low quality sources on the internet have much more coverage because they're taking advantage of those. You might just call them, wrap them all together into a topic or the term social media. So it's something that I have to do amongst all of the other things I'm trying to accomplish. If you understand also that I do all of this myself, and maybe in the future I'll have more people to help with promotion, etc. But doing all this myself, it just takes a lot of time, and most of my time today is spent with the wing generator, which I'm going to spend 1 minute talking about here. The push now for energy independence is fundamental for people on farms and ranches, especially to become energy independent. So that's where I'm focusing the majority of my time. Yesterday on John Moore's show, somebody called in asking about, I don't know if it was coronavirus or this, you know, some, you know, the incidents that are going on around the world. And I just said, look, I am very busy with the things that I'm doing in a positive sense. That's where I spend my time. And there are other people covering those topics. And so I just kind of, there are a lot of people covering those topics, doing a good job, looking at all aspects of that, which they should be. But I have to keep focused on what I'm doing, which is food, is the Grow Towers, amazing, amazing products. The shipping container buildings, water issues. I have water solutions for every possible water situation. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. And then, of course, the wing generator, which is for farms and ranches, it is paramount to have your own energy. This is not an option anymore. I just want to discuss food shortage. There's reports recently of these hate crimes, etc., and stopping semi-trucks that have food and shooting at them. So this is getting pretty crazy. But this is just the beginning. Remember, this is summertime, and these things have been planned for a long time, but they're going to gradually roll this out until the country is in complete chaos by November. That's clearly the target date, is to have everything coming unglued, and that's why I say NASA will get involved prior, somewhere probably in the October time frame, dealing with some kind of a false flag that will end up with major disruption, probably including the shutting down of electricity, which would just bring everything to a standstill. And so if you're on a farm or ranch, your independent power is imperative. But there's, in the food shortage is the other thing, is if you don't have electricity, there's no delivery of food. The food supply in the country is very limited. And there's an interesting thing that I noticed. If you go back to the Maunder Minimum, this is very interesting. This is back in the Middle Ages. There was a period of about 50 years where the sun just didn't put out much energy. There was a very cold climate. The crops failed. And what is very interesting is that the bakers, not the farmers, but the bakers held the wheat crop. And as things became scarce, the people were going to the bakers to get bread products, which is, of course, a staple. And they couldn't get it. And so the bakers were the ones that held back the wheat from getting to the public. And the bakers were saving it for themselves. So it's very interesting that my point is that the farmers did not hold the food. It went to an intermediate an intermediary, which were the bakers, the people that took the grain, ground it up into flour, made the bread, and then sold it to the public. In fact, back to the farmers, because the farmer with grain really didn't have a mechanism to produce grain to change it into flour, grind it into flour, because they had become mechanized. They had become bigger than, you know, back in the old days, people would take grain and literally by hand with called a mortar and pestle, but it's basically a rock. You've seen these. And the people take the rock, one rock, it's like you can hold in your hand, and the other one is a big rock that sits down on the floor, and rubbing it back and forth to grind the grain. That was done by hand, but of course then it got mechanized. And throughout the Middle Ages, they actually used wind. That was one of the primary uses of, remember the old wind towers? It is said, like in around 1200 AD, that England was covered with wind systems. So they were using wind to saw boards. They were using wind to grind grain as far back as, the 1200s. Which you think, gee, you know, this is kind of like remote history. This is not something you learn in school. But there was quite advanced civilization throughout that time, which led up to the Renaissance, where people had extra time on their hands. So that's the arts and the music and all of the artsy, craftsy, the music, everything that came out of the Renaissance period. Because people had extra time. It wasn't just going out and raising food and gathering food and making your daily quota of food, and that's all your time was spent on that. No, then people became merchants, then there was seafaring and mercantile ocean traffic, etc., which caused a great advancement in civilization. And, of course, exploration, all of that, that's when the world really became explored for the first time in thousands of years. Remember that the Earth had been highly populated prior to the Noah's Flood, you know, almost probably more than today. There might have been 10, 15 billion people on Earth before the Noah's Flood, which was a torrential rain for 40 days and 40 nights as the Earth passed through the tail of a comet. And very few people lived through that. Then there was the Venus event, the Moses event. That was especially devastating, especially for larger animals. And the civilizations made it through that. But still, lots and lots of people died in that event. That's where the Colburn comes in, by the way. And so it all comes back to agriculture. Is there enough agriculture to support the population? And, you know, we're enjoying incredible, bountiful, warm weather. You know, they talk about the warm weather, etc., but it opens up a lot more land for farming. But if you have social collapse going on at the same time and the inability to process food and get it to the public, then you're left, you actually go back, you revert back to a time when you were depending on your food from a local source. In other words, not more than walking distance from your house. So if let me just put it this way, if you do not have a food source for all of your food that is in within walking distance from your house, then you're going to have a problem. Or if you don't have enough food stored up, and I'll tell you, I know about food storage. I've sold it. I used to sell back in the old days. I sold the, what was the brand name? It just escapes me right now. But recently also selling the Numana name brand of emergency food. But you can only store up so much. At a certain point, even that was going to run out. What are you going to do? And by the way, that's why I sell the grow towers and encourage people to buy seeds. And that tower alone could save your behind by having your own greens. You know, you can usually find starches. A lot of times you can find meat or fish or proteins. But what's hard is finding green. food, vegetables, lettuce, things like that. And so anyway, that's why I got into that business, because I think it's imperative that people have their own source of vegetables. Greens, that's a very major part, and also fruit. You can grow some berries and things like that in the grow towers also. So it's imperative that people have, you know, a supply of food readily available. And I looked at some of the arguments for climate change relative to the Earth cooling down. You know, for decades now, they've been talking about, by 2030, the temperature is going to rise 0.2 degrees Celsius and, you know, whatever. The real threat, and I don't make predictions, but another contrary trend is in the amount of energy coming out of the sun. And I've talked about this before, that what really happened is, number one, we're coming out of an ice age. We call it coming out of an ice age that was caused by cometary activity. And that's why when real science takes a backseat to garbage science, especially on the internet, on YouTube, it is really poorly understood why these trends are going on. And so comets have a major effect on the sun. And in the case of the 1990s into the early 2000s, where we maxed out on sunspots, we maxed out on solar energy, etc., it was because the comet Hale-Bopp was discharging the solar capacitor, and that electrical current coming back into the sun pumped up the sun's energy. After around 2002, 2003, things started dropping off. We went 600 days without sunspots. It's absolutely ridiculous. I remember being on coast to coast, and time after time, and they'd say, well, have there been any sunspots? No. 600 days without a sunspot on the sun. And by the way, the charts that people show don't show that the sunspot count really did not follow any kind of cycle. It was zero for over 600 days, and then they started trickling back, and even now we never really went through a big maximum. We had a double maximum between 2000 and 2002. In that two-year period, we had a double maximum, and that's because of the comet Hale-Bopp. And so when you look at the Maunder minimum, once again, predicting this or even analyzing it in retrospect is difficult because we don't have good models for the sun. And just tracking these trends is good, but there is a trend that shows that we are heading into a severe cooling period. And that we need carbon dioxide in the atmosphere so that the plants grow better. What do you do in a greenhouse when it's a little cooler? You can put excess amount of carbon dioxide in there, and the plants grow 2 to 3 times better. So there's a lot of conflicting concepts floating around, and I don't personally have a crystal ball, so I cannot tell you what the future holds. Is it going to get cooler? Is it going to get warmer? Will one trend overtake the other? Will the warming trend overtake the cooling trend? I mean, it's hard to say. But I can tell you one thing is that even if that works out so that we have a nice constant climate for the next 100 years, we're dealing with social unrest that's going to cause you to have problems getting food. So that's why I keep pounding this. So energy, housing, stable housing, water, clean water. And if you're not growing your food with clean water, then you're basically all that water. Let me just give you an example. Say there was a contaminant in your water and you're watering your plants, whether indoors or outdoor garden or whatever, with that contaminated water. Well, the water goes through. The water it helps build up the plant, but then it respirates also. So the plant is giving off water. But what happens to the contaminant? It stays in the plant. It builds up. It accumulates. So you're accumulating in this plant all of the chemicals that are in the water you're putting on the plant. So you need clean water with minerals, because the minerals are important for the growth of the plant, And if you have, like, if you poured distilled water on a plant and it had no nutrients, the plant wouldn't grow. It would sprout because the seed has food in the seed for the initial growth period. But as soon as that's gone, the plant wouldn't have anything to grow on. So you need minerals in the water. You cannot use distilled water or reverse osmosis water, in fact, for plants. It doesn't work. So you need water with minerals in it. And typically what happens with the rainwater comes down, it does not have mineral content. And so then the plants depend on the mineral content that is in the earth. Okay, with the grow towers, you have a mixture of all of the nutrients that are essential for plant growth in the solution. So they get a nice, healthy combination of the proper nutrients, the minerals, and everything else that the plants need. And so then they can grow properly. But it's very important in a closed container type situation, like with the grow towers that I'm selling, to have a good clean water. So you want to filter your water before you use it. So water is very important. But anyway, that's why I concentrate on wind energy, wind is every place. Wind in summer. You know, if you look at the number of places where solar works, I talked about this on last week's show, that the solar doesn't work majority places on Earth. It doesn't work. It's a good seller for California, you know, Arizona, places like that. You'll see that's where the biggest market is for solar panels, like to home customers, putting them on people's homes. That's a market. But it, you know, as far as solar panels in Minnesota or Michigan or the Dakotas, you know, there's not a lot of point because you have so many months of the year where it's cloudy. They just don't provide anything. There's not really a payback there. Okay, so enough of that. But also, like I say, listen to my show yesterday, The Power Hour with Daniel Brigman. And I'll be talking more and more about this because each one of these topics is major. Major aspect of growing food. And if, for example, you don't have good seeds, then how are you going to grow food? And it's essential that you start sourcing your food locally and maybe know a farmer that has chickens and I would suggest also that people become independent themselves. This situation is only going to get worse relative to availability of food. Okay, so I have about 10 minutes left here, and so what I want to do is define your new world. And so this is changing so fast that really you have to adapt. And you have to adapt because of your family, because of your loved ones, because of yourself. You have to adapt to a world that was unthinkable just a few short months ago. And so as I was saying, energy, food, water, how do you know, if you live in a city, in an apartment, how do you become, how do you adapt to all of these amazing social changes that are just being thrown at you? My personal suggestion is, just a suggestion, because I'm not telling people what to do, and I know a lot of people who are staying in the cities. They're staying where they are. You know, you have to understand, too, is that when the news blows up certain topics, it's in certain areas. There's a certain small number of isolated cases. And so the majority of people, from the people I talk to, are going about their life in a normal manner. And so your future may be just, you know, things are getting back to normal for a lot of people, is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, so their you know, weekly trip to the grocery store, the sort of water that comes out of the faucet, you know, a lot of them are still working from home, and that's may go on for a period of time. In fact, there's probably a lot of corporations that have changed their strategies. I'll tell you one thing. I'm seeing that the cities like Seattle and San Francisco which were previously hubs of high-tech industry, those industries are moving. I just saw another one the other day, billion-dollar industry. Rex, it's called. It's named after, that's the guy's last name, is Rex. Rex Industries is moving from Seattle. They said, you know, there's a good environment for work for a lot of things, but it's not a place that they want their people, their employees living. So they're pulling up shop, boom, right now, and they're moving to another state. From what I understand, it'll be Texas. So anyway, they are moving there. And Tesla is moving to Texas because they've had it with California and all the insanity. I mean, it's just you can't be there. It's like somebody taking a dump in the middle of your living room. You know, and the politicians are just, you know, this is the liberal mindset, is to destroy everything around you and think that it's normal. Hey, that's just normal to have people attacking people on the streets, homeless people with needles. You know, the homeless people with needles, let's give them more needles. But don't have a way to pick them up. I mean, it's absolute insanity. Absolute insanity. And so these companies are just picking up and moving. They're moving to a place that has better lifestyle for their families. And that's what they're considering. It's not a business move because of higher profit. It's not a business move because of being around other prospering companies. And that's what made Seattle just a booming place, to the point where the property values were three times that of any other place in the U.S. A little house in Seattle, $1 million. Absolutely insane. But let me tell you something, that's all coming to an end. Those corporations are leaving there in droves. Southern California, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area and Silicon Valley and the Seattle area, you know, big tech, they're just leaving. They're leaving in droves. I should correct that a little bit, because Amazon is actually building homeless locations up there. They're putting money into trying to clean up the city. But, the liberal mindset still is destroying the place where they live, you know, allowing the insanity to go on. And of all places, Seattle was, interestingly enough, one of the highest crime areas in the country, which is strange. You know, it's followed by San Francisco. But Seattle was one of the highest crime areas in the entire country. I mean, it is. If you look at the statistics of violent, you know, crime, the kind where, you know, somebody that doesn't know the person actually just comes up and at gunpoint robs them, or car thefts, violent crime, person-to-person type of crime, Seattle is the top of the list. Then San Francisco is second. So you look at if you go right down the list, they're all democratically held locations. So this is not political, because the Democratic Party stopped being the Democratic Party a long time ago. They're the party of destruction, as I don't know what else you could call it. But at any rate, the other issue is that the people that would normally come out to protect you are not doing it. There's everybody sitting in the corner, not doing anything, including the president. So this is coming down to you taking care of yourself. So that, getting back to defining your new world. So your new world is you taking care of yourself. I mean, we lived in a society where things were functioning like no other country in the history of the world had ever functioned. And certainly there were problems. And one of the problems was the disparity in income. And companies like Amazon, which, you know, tends to put a lot of money back into things, like, for example, cleaning up energy. That's one of the major things they're doing. It takes away from, they're closing down mom and pop shops all around the country. You cannot compete as a store with Amazon. Everybody orders from Amazon. It's getting to the point where if you don't sell on Amazon, you don't have a storefront. It's as simple as that. It's pretty crazy. So there's a lot of disparity, a lot of difference in the world, and it's growing at exponential rates. So taking care of yourself is paramount, and so that's what I spend my time on right now. I do my science work. That's something that I'm always doing in the background. I just came out with my book, Planet X Update 2020, very important book. But that was something that was sitting on the shelf for a while. I would love to spend more of my time working on my prime number work, and that is going on in the background, a lot of great progress there. But the thing that really I have to put my talent on right now is the wing generator and getting that out to people. And once I get all of that set up and moving, then I'll be able to put my attention to some other things. I have what you see me doing is about 20%, maybe 10% of what I'm actually doing in the background. There's a lot more going on in the background. But right now, my main effort is with the wing generator and all of the related products. The water products are important, and I wanted to mention this, that water from the rain and from surface and from underground wells, that provides about 60% of the world's water supply. And then reverse osmosis for brackish water and seawater is going to provide maybe around another 10 to 20%. I'm talking about water futures here. And then the other, someday that we will be getting water from the air. And of course, I have my water from the air product line, very efficient, very energy efficient products. And these have many other applications. For example, like if you have a greenhouse, you may want to extract water from the air, cleanse it, put it through a purifier, which is in the last stage of the water from the air machine, and then put it back into your aeroponics or your aquaponics or your grow system, even if it's just a regular greenhouse. And so that's another application for water from the air machines. So anyway, but it takes a lot of energy, and then of course I provide energy with the wing generator. All of this very well thought out. And, of course, electric car charging stations in the mix also. So that's where I'm moving. That's where I'm spending a lot of my time, because we can roll this out on a worldwide scale. At any rate, go to my webpage for more information, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.